Coming up, Fred DeSam Lazaro on fighting poverty successfully in the Philippines.
This is a country that does not have any excuse to remain poor.
Also, Lucky Severson reports on the long campaign of Catholic priest Michael Doyle to fight poverty and crime in Camden, New Jersey.
We're working against the odds, but I think God is on our side.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us this day when we have a pair of strong stories on helping the poor in a third world country and in a crime-ridden U.S. city. First, the top news. Pope Francis this week appointed his first group of cardinals, and his choices suggested his embrace of the Church's growing diversity. Europeans, and especially Italians, have historically dominated the College of Cardinals, but many of the 19 new cardinals are from the global south, especially developing countries in Latin America, Asia, and Africa. None of them was an American, and only four were Vatican officials. Observers said the Pope's choices were a clear sign of his preference for the poor and marginalized. The new cardinals will be formally installed in February. Francis also delivered his strongest remarks yet against abortion during his annual State of the World address to a group of Vatican diplomats. He called abortion a horrific practice and a sign of, quote, the throwaway culture. Francis has been criticized by conservative Catholics for not speaking out against abortion as much as previous popes did. Meanwhile, the Vatican itself came under scrutiny at a UN hearing in Geneva for its handling of clergy sex abuse cases. The UN panel questioned church officials about not requiring bishops to report suspected abuse to local authorities. Vatican representatives said the Vatican's power to sanction priests is limited, but admitted that more could be done to prevent crimes. Victims' rights groups are watching closely to see what action the Church will take, if any. This week, the Vatican played host to Secretary of State John Kerry in a visit expected to pave the way for a meeting between President Obama and Pope Francis. During the 90-minute meeting, Kerry and Vatican Secretary of State Pietro Parolin discussed issues ranging from the Syrian civil war to U.S. health care reform. Kerry was also in Kuwait this week to attend a conference to raise donations for victims of Syria's civil war. Kuwait led off the conference by pledging $500 million to the relief effort, and the U.S. pledged an additional $380 million. The U.N. has appealed for a record $6.5 billion in aid for Syrians in 2014, the most for any single cause in U.N. history. There were several major court decisions this week about abortion and same-sex marriage. A federal judge in Oklahoma struck down a state ban on same-sex marriage. Weddings will not begin just yet, however. The judge stayed his decision, expecting the state to appeal. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case pitting anti-abortion activists against the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts is defending its buffer zone law, which requires that anti-abortion protests take place no closer than 35 feet from the entrances to clinics that perform abortions. Anti-abortion activists say the law violates their exercise of free speech. In 1973, the Supreme Court ruled in its famous Roe v. Wade decision that states could not restrict abortions before 24 weeks of pregnancy. Since then, more than a dozen states, including Arizona, have passed laws restricting abortion after 20 weeks. Last year, the U.S. Court of Appeals struck down the Arizona law, saying it was unconstitutional. And this week, in a blow to abortion opponents, the Supreme Court decided not to review the appeals court decision. Now, fighting poverty successfully in the Philippines, Fred DeSam-Lazaro reports on one man's campaign to persuade the very poor in Manila's slums to move back to the land and create a Silicon Valley for agribusiness. Economist Tony Maloto says in 3 years, his movement has transformed the lives of up to 1 million people.
In a country that's rapidly urbanizing into ever more crowded cities, Tony Maloto is trying to get people to come or come back to the farm.
Well, we're growing here rice and organic rice, and we have 30 different crops here.
3 years ago, Maloto established an 85-acre campus about 2 hours from the capital, Manila. Called the Enchanted Farm, it's a village of about 50 families relocated from urban slums, a farm, and a place for research and innovation.
The vision is making this the Silicon Valley for agribusiness and social entrepreneurship.
There's lots of fertile land in the Philippines, Maloto says. It just doesn't produce enough of the right crops and products. So rural people move to the city in search of a livelihood. Those who can leave the country. About 10% of this nation of 100 million, doctors, nurses, welders, and domestic workers, work abroad.
So how many of you are planning to leave the country after you graduate?
Maloto, an economist by training and one of the country's best-known anti-poverty activists, tries to persuade young visitors to the farm to stay.
So it is possible to create another career or business path, no, in this country, rather than be a domestic worker abroad, which is not bad because they are the heroes of the Philippines. But I think the next generation like yours will be wealth creators in the Philippines and job generators, not job seekers abroad.
Maloto came from a lower middle class family, but with scholarships was a high academic achiever and went on to an international business career. But he felt keenly aware of those left behind.
I started to see that the basic problem was the disconnection of those privileged with the best education, with the best opportunities, from those who had no dignity, no justice, no hope. I felt that I had to go back to the Philippines, go to the poorest slum, and try to discover myself. So I was a missionary then.
He began in the mid-90s with a lay Catholic organization trying to forge a sense of community in slums riddled by gang violence. A few years later, he moved away from the group's spiritual approach to one of social justice.
I am a Catholic and I practice it, but I want faith in action. So I want to build heaven on earth and not just, you know, think of heaven in the afterlife, but of really ending, you know, to getting my people out of hell in this life.
He rallied volunteers and founded Gawad Kalinga, which means giving care. Their first priority was to build decent housing.
I realized that I have to help transform the physical environment, because a human being who lives in an animal pen will think and behave like an animal. And when men are deprived of their dignity, then they are on a survival mode, and that's when they get into gangs.
Today, Gawad Kalinga has transformed the homes of 200,000 families, about 1 million people. Residents built and maintain them. They elect their own community leaders. These enclaves stand out for their cleanliness and bright colors, located across the Philippines from Manila to Leyte Province in the path of the deadly recent Typhoon Haiyan.
Gawad Kalinga communities located in the path of the recent super typhoon did sustain some damage. There are roofs that are blown off, but for the most part, the structures are still standing. The typhoon killed more than 6,000 people, but not a single one of them was in a Gawad Kalinga community.
we coordinate with the local government units and they point to us where safe areas are.
Safe because they're on higher ground and on deeded land. Millions of people in informal settlements don't have land title, so they're vulnerable to eviction. Gawad Kalinga has never paid to acquire land for its communities. Instead, the group convinces landowners to donate a part of their holdings, promising to work with the government to develop infrastructure to everyone's benefit.
When you have a community of this size, government will start building those public roads. When you have those public roads and electricity, then obviously the land will appreciate.
That idea of shared prosperity is behind the farm project. Miloto wants people from privileged backgrounds to come here and develop socially minded businesses.
It should be 10 pieces.
Some of the earliest ones have actually been started by young Europeans, a toy maker working with local women and local materials, hoping to grow in a market where almost all toys are imported from China. Another enterprise is marketing a traditional lemongrass tea, thought to prevent certain diseases. Elsewhere, a laid-off garment worker and a former domestic worker, both refugees from Manila slums, are advised on how to combine their culinary skills with business savvy. They hope to install food stamps like this one in shopping malls, selling sausage patties and sandwiches.
I'm really grateful to live here. Before this, I lived in Manila, close to the river, and it flooded any time it rained hard. I was living like a squatter.
This is my little store.
Today, as she builds her food business, Baldoza sells convenience items from her home. Her husband, who works on the farm and cares for their two pigs, and their 12-year-old son enjoy a modest home, but it's secure and dry.
We can sleep well. My life here is very happy and happy.
Comfortable.
Yeah, comfortable.
To sustain the farm, there's a new conference center that will bring visitors, ideas, and revenue. The complex was built with donations from several large companies like Shell Oil and the car maker Hyundai. It's not charity, Miloto says, just good marketing.
This will be the venue for the National Youth Congress. This is sponsored by the Philippine Armed Forces.
So, General, these are the new generation of Filipinos.
As the conference began, Miloto introduced four young people who've come to work on the farm. All are top graduates of prestigious universities, usually a ticket to far more lucrative jobs abroad. Two of them actually returned from jobs overseas, market research in Singapore, investment banking in New York. Sherry Atilano passed up a Fulbright scholarship that would have taken her to Germany, driven by what she calls an urgent need to revitalize agriculture.
There's a lot of hungry people in the Philippines, but knowing that we also have 12 million hectares of underproductive land, I'm so optimistic to really make the agriculture as a stable backbone of our economy.
The combination of the genius of the poor and the rich is quite explosive.
This is a country that does not have any excuse to remain poor. And it is important for us now to raise a new generation of Filipinos who will have that kind of conviction.
Gawad Kalinga's goal is to bring 5 million families out of poverty by 2024. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred De Sam Lazaro in Bulacan, the Philippines.
Also today, a different kind of anti-poverty work, a Catholic priest's ministry in Camden, New Jersey. Father Michael Doyle loves his parishioners and has led great improvements in housing and education. But drug wars have killed so many people, he says, conditions overall are worse now than they were 39 years ago when he arrived from Ireland. Lucky Severson reports from Camden.
Sunday Mass at Sacred Heart in Camden, New Jersey. This is a special one that sadly has become a tradition.
Dante Perkins, 25, shot to death.
It's a Mass for the 55 young men and women murdered in Camden in the past year. Father Michael Doyle officiating.
Georgiana Jedzajewski, 56, stabbed to death.
For 18 years, Father Doyle has been conducting a mass for the murdered.
I counted up this morning the number of murders since we started in 1995, and the number was 788. Imagine, in this little town, 788 persons lost their lives in this city in that tragic fashion. It's a terrible place for a kid to grow up. It's terrible. It is terrible. And that's why I think of America as being a generous country. But America has made a decision to sacrifice the poor. So the poor are concentrated in this country. They go from one city to another. They're concentrated. That concentration is deadly.
Nowhere, according to the most recent census, are the poor more concentrated than in Camden. Nearly half the population of 77,000 lives in poverty. Unemployment is almost 20%. You can buy a house here for as little as $15,000. Across the Delaware River in the shiny city of Philadelphia, houses go for as much as $15 million.
It's not just the poverty, not only the neighborhoods that look as if they've been bombed out. It's a crime. In 2012, there were 266 shootings, 67 homicides, which makes Camden, per capita, according to the FBI, the most dangerous city in the U.S.
17-year-old Julian Jaquez knows how scary it is here.
Recently, I just started being allowed to go outside. I went here to Sacred Heart, and I had friends who lived across the street, and I still wasn't allowed out. I had friends who lived two houses down from me, still wasn't allowed out.
90% of that is coming out of drug wars and the prevalence of guns and the anger within young people. It's slaughter. So when I look at that, Camden is worse than when I came here 39 years ago.
Father Doyle came here not long after race riots dealt Camden a serious blow. The Vietnam War and protests against it were in full swing. He, along with Father Daniel Berrigan, still his close friend, were arrested as part of the famous Camden 28, charged with breaking into a government building to destroy draft records. It was a world away from his home in Ireland, where he goes to rejuvenate.
I have the best place in the world, the farm on which I was born and raised, and my family for four generations. I'm so at home and nurtured, like back in the womb. It's an amazing kind of thing.
And then he returns to Camden, which he refers to as a people fill, a landfill for poor people. But he sees beauty here.
I see it all the time, a beauty that's deep and wonderful, and sometimes tragic, but beauty, absolutely, I do. Their faces are there with their burdens and their wrinkles and their difficulties and so forth, but beauty that's just jumping at you.
He's not a fire and brimstone preacher, but his faith is intense.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to say how thankful I am for the blessing of you here.
Hi, Lolly.
How you doing?
Praise the Lord.
And they love him, not just as Father Doyle, but as a man of God who refuses to give up.
I'm drawn back because it's a place where a church is of value.
Few would argue about the value of Father Doyle and Sacred Heart to Camden.
Actually, we've built this whole thing around Michael Doyle. He is the most wonderful person in the world. He lives a real Christian life. It's just wonderful. We love him.
We practiced this yesterday. She did very well.
This is a weekly Saturday morning food sharing and prayer service. They give away food freely here, but mostly to women.
Because the women are the feeders of the children, and we have found that sometimes the men come and then we find them selling the food on the street.
Come, Holy Spirit, and fire with energy and willingness to rebuild Kansas City to your honor and glory. Amen.
Sacred Heart also funds a food kitchen, and there's always a full house. And then there's the Sacred Heart Primary School for 200 kids. Most of them are not Catholic. Father Doyle was worried that the diocese would close Sacred Heart, as the church has so many inner city schools.
We created a sponsorship. We set it up at people would give $300 a year, and that would help the family to get the child through.
Many in the congregation who are Catholic come from as far away as 50 miles to attend Mass. They, and hundreds on the mailing list, get epistles each month from Father Doyle containing homilies and poetry and a request for help. In 2012, he raised more than $900,000. Camden Mayor Dana Redd, a Baptist, attended Sacred Heart School after her parents died from gun violence. Here's a picture of her giving flowers to Mother Teresa when she visited the parish.
I can say that Sacred Heart really played an important role in shaping and framing the person that I am today. They were my extended family in so many respects.
Julian's mother helped pay for his schooling at Sacred Heart. His father wasn't around.
I do sometimes wonder, like, what would my life be like if I had that perfect family? But then I think about the people who don't have what I have. I mean, it's bad, but there's people who have worse.
Helene Pearson has been in charge of Father Doyle's Heart of Camden project, which is now purchased, refurbished, and resold close to 250 homes at reduced rates for those who could never afford a house before.
The houses were going empty in Camden so fast at that time in the early 80s that we moved people in, volunteers rehabbed the house, and their credit was poor. Now the percentage is almost 100%.
That make their payments.
I'll be moving in either Monday or Friday.
Christia Rodriguez is so happy she can hardly contain herself. She and her two boys are moving out of her mom's house and into a Heart of Camden house, which she can own for $600 a month. She recently got a job with the police department.
At least here, I can actually let my boys play on the sidewalk. I would never let my boys play on the sidewalk where my mom lives.
Father Doyle says what keeps him going is one little victory at a time.
Even when Jesus was here, he cured 10 lepers, and nobody asked him how many lepers are in the quarries. So I always go by that principle. My bit in God's hands is enough. I just do that little bit. That's all I can do. So I don't take all of Camden into my head or my heart. I just take a bit of it.
The day before the special Mass, there was a ceremony across the street from Sacred Heart, planting crosses for those who have fallen in the last 12 months. Christia was there with her two boys, whose father was gunned down in 2012. And Julian was there to honor his close friend, Juan Rosa.
He was literally like an older brother.
Juan O. Rosa, 25, shot to death.
When the stand-ins for the murdered stand together, shoulder to shoulder, the magnitude of the loss is overwhelming.
And God will raise you up on eagle's wings.
I guess if Camden can turn it around, any place can turn it around.
That's very, very true. If we had Frank Sinatra to come here and sing for us, if you can do it there...
You can do it anywhere.
That's right. You can do it anywhere. We're working against the odds, but I think God is on our side.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Camden, New Jersey.
On our calendar, Monday is Martin Luther King Day, the national holiday honoring the slain civil rights leader who would have been 85 years old. Many will remember Dr. King by holding religious services and by volunteering in their communities. Finally, an ecumenical milestone in Boston. 50 years ago, the late Richard Cushing became the first Catholic cardinal in the country to speak at a Protestant church. Last weekend, Boston's current Archbishop, Cardinal Sean O'Malley, remembered that occasion by visiting the same United Methodist Church. The clergy were recalling Jesus' baptism by putting drops of water on people's foreheads. Unexpectedly, O'Malley asked the church's senior minister to anoint him. The Reverend Ann Robertson was happy to do so. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. And visit our website, where there's always much more and where you can listen to or watch each of our programs. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from the Washington National Cathedral, where this week all the chairs were removed for a special choral performance called The Spirit in Flight.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.